very special edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. This might be the first podcast ever that has been recorded in a live moving bus, but that is the beauty of it. Of course, we are sponsored by First Bus very proudly and very happily. And we thought we'd take the pod, international break, plenty to talk about. We thought we'd make it that a little bit more interesting by doing it on a bus going through the heart of Norwich. So we're currently sat on a 25 bus heading towards the UEA. We're likely to do the reverse journey of that as well as this pod goes on. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, joined by my colleagues, Paddy Davitt and Samuel Seaman. And then we are joined by First Bus's Zach Nelson and a Norwich fan as well, we should add as well. And there is plenty to discuss. We've got plenty of your questions to get through as well in the second part of the show. We're going to have a little bit of a chat about the buses and all that good stuff as well halfway through. Sam, let's start with you because you've got a mic in your hand. So that seems like a natural place to start. Obviously, dust has now settled on that Bristol City defeat and everything that happened. What are your feelings, reflections this week? Just looking back on that and I guess gauging the general mood, albeit I know we went into this in depth on the last pod.
Yeah, I think the international break has probably helped mood-wise. I think it was probably a game that Norwich needed a bit of that break after. I think actually you speak to people about the performance and especially in the second half, it felt like there were some good signs there, but at the moment it's not really the sort of situation where people are desperate to focus on the good signs, and you can sort of understand why. It feels like now with 8 games left of the season, yes, for some of the reasons we outlined on the last podcast, there are lots of things for Norwich to play for and a lot for them to prove. But ultimately, I think the fact that their playoff goal is sort of tailed off so early is disappointing to a lot of people, and I don't think the mood is great. But that's probably where the international break comes in. People could probably do with a bit of a break from Norwich City, and then I'm sure they'll be desperate to prove a point in the last 8 games.
Yeah, and Paddy, I mean, you spoke about this quite in depth on the last pod about the last 8 games. I mean, Chris Sutton wrote a column about it in the week, sort of on a similar point, really, about how it cannot just be a drift and a fizzle out. I mean, if you're a player in that dressing room at the moment, particularly if you're looking at year 2 in this project, if you're an Antti Sinnerts and Oscar Schwartau, what an opportunity the last 8 games are to really, you know, advance your claims, to really show why you should be a part of the team under Johannes next season.
And that's the guy who matters in all of this, because I'll try and paraphrase what he said, but more or less was that is that they have an obligation to the fan base, they have an obligation to, you know, anybody connected with Norwich to show that, okay, you know, if the short-term goal was get into the top 6, that looks to be beyond them now, so you could say they've come up short in that one, but we know this is mid to long term. We obviously got into the weeds of that in the last podcast record, and I think most, judging by the feedback we've had and the reaction, I think most are still fully on board. I think speaking briefly to Zach, I think he's firmly in that camp as well, that, you know, 7 months would be ridiculously early to call time on it. But by the same token, that isn't to paper over some of the issues and most recently the Bristol game and the manner of they've conceded the goals and what they're not doing out of possession and some of those elements. I think it is right to question that. It is right to shine a light on that. And as a result, in what's left of this season, you need to see signs of improvement, be it individuals who step forward, or for me, probably more so, it's put the light on Johannes and his coaching team to try and address those issues out of possession. There's no debate when Norwich have the ball, the record shows this season. You know, only Leeds, I think, have scored more goals in the Championship. Chance creation, chance taking isn't the issue, but to move it forward from a team who are languishing in mid-table to one who could realistically compete for the top 6, it's what they do out of possession. And that, for me, is probably the biggest thing in these remaining 8 games. It's less maybe a Sinnerts or a Schwartau putting their hand up and saying, I want to be part of this McConville next season. It's, can we really see in this block of games clear signs of progression? And that you get to the end of the season, you think, okay, it's been a bumpy ride, but we know what they can do in possession. We've seen signs in these last 8 games what they can do out of possession. And, of course, we'll measure that maybe in results, but also goals conceded, chances conceded. And I think that would engender a degree of maybe more optimism than, as Sam rightly says, it feels there is there at the minute. Because at the minute, you know, they are being tested if you're a Norwich fan, because while you're willing to give them time, you want more evidence for me of why you're giving this group and this head coach, sporting director and ownership model now time, rather than well, let's get to the summer and then we'll move a few pieces around again in the transfer window and hopefully it'll come together. I think you want a bit more than that.
Norwich City probably are going to need a goalkeeper in the summer. Adam's doing a stellar job keeping that tripod nice and still for us over what was a very bumpy Castle Meadow. I mean, Zach, let's get your thoughts on it because you're a Norwich fan. I think it's interesting when you speak to Norwich fans, it feels to me increasingly like, and there's probably more than this, but it feels, you know, if you're going to generalise, it feels like there are two camps. Those that, you know, as Paddy said, are maybe feeling that this needs another year and another window. And probably the reverse of that, people who are frustrated. There's probably, of course, loads in the middle of that as well. So where do you sit? Where do you find yourself at the moment on Norwich City?
Well, it is frustrating, of course. Everybody wants to win games. Everybody wants to pick up points home and away. But at the same time, you've got to think realistically, and it is a new head coach and it is a new style of play, and it's going to take time to bed in. We haven't had that many transfer windows, what, two under Torup, and you can already see the shoots, I think, in a lot of the games, even recent ones, that although the results haven't been there. Like it's been mentioned, Bristol City second half, I sat and watched and thought, how the hell have we not scored in the second half, or got back into it, get a point or even three. But at the same time, obviously, this is the third year in the Championship and it's looking like it's going to be a fourth. And recent times, we don't know what that feels like. So that's probably why there's a lot of frustration, because we're used to coming down maybe 1 year and then we're straight back up again and having I would say lovely time in the Premier League, but all hoping for a lovely time in the Premier League. Whereas at the moment, we don't know how long it's going to take. And it's each year goes past, I worry that we're going to turn into teams like Stoke or West Brom. I mean, even the dreaded Ipswich that time where they languished there for 15 years. So it's difficult, it's frustrating, but I can see the shoots and I think that we should stick by it, stick with it, and hope that next season we've got another chance, our window in the summer, obviously the January as well. By the end of that window, we want to be kind of where we should be. I think that's when we'll have a squad that Torup wants and the squad that Napa wants, and that's when we should judge.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point, Sam, particularly given what Zach said about, you know, promotion, which clearly is the objective here. That's clearly the aim for Norwich City, to get themselves back into the Premier League. And they are now going down a route of trying to build a strategy and a process that enables them to do that. And it's difficult. There's no one way to do it, because everyone would do it if that was the case. There are a multitude of different ways. You look statistically, it's year one that is your best chance of going up, obviously. Then it's year two. Then obviously it decreases year after year. So for me, my sort of frustration at the events that have unfolded over the last few years and Norwich City being in the Championship, it's year one where they finished, what was it, 13th in that first year under Dean Smith and David Wagner, and they got that wrong. And then of course it was year two, they got a lot closer. But it feels like now Norwich City are in a process where they're having to basically fix a lot of that work that happened in those 2 years, which were short-term based. And that is why we find ourselves probably having a season where they're unpicking a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I suppose that's a lot of the problem when you reflect on the last couple of years. And I would agree that a lot of the decisions made in that first year in particular were maybe the bigger long-term problem, and the failure to really make a go of trying to get promoted in the 22-23 season. But I think it's also important in the appraisal of last season, because I think, you know, I don't think anyone would feel like a sixth place finish, you know, when maybe the resources aren't brilliant. And I think, to be fair to David Wagner, he got a good amount out of those players. I don't think anyone would say that in isolation that one season was terrible, but we've seen what the impacts can be, not only at Norwich but at other clubs. I think, you know, Zach mentioned in his answer, I think we've seen the impacts that short-term thinking can have. And that's probably part of what the frustration was at the time. I think there were a lot of people maybe fairly confused at the negative perception around a team that was in the promotion hunt right until the end of the season and that semi-final defeat by Leeds. But I think we're seeing now, with the scale of the job that Ben Napa and Johannes Hoftorup have to do, why there was that frustration and why people maybe were looking ahead to the problems that it could create. So yeah, I think you're right, actually. As much as we can look at this season and criticise it, a lot of it goes back much further than that, and the first couple of seasons that Norwich were in the Championship, because I mean, people can probably go back and listen to our podcast from that time for plenty of the reasons why, but there were a lot of reasons why they just didn't do what they could have done with the resources they had available as a first-season championship club back then. And yeah, I think you're right to highlight that. And it's probably something we haven't really talked about too much this season, and I can understand why. But when you're a club like Norwich, who are expected to compete for promotion every season that they're in the championship, and you're, is it 13th right now? There is a reason for that, and it's probably not just that, you know, the head coach is so bad or the players are so bad that, you know, they're 9-10 places away from where they should be. That's probably a bigger problem, and I think you're right to highlight it, because it's not really something that we talk about too much.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to Paddy in a moment, but I'm just interested, Zach, obviously you are the Norwich fan on the panel, so it's good to sort of come to you on these points. How are you feeling about the summer coming up? Because I think a lot of fans are looking at it. They're clearly looking at the two, but I guess we could put Nunez in that category as well, with Sargent and Saints, and going, well, it's going to be tough again next year because you're likely going to lose them too. So can you understand why there are people looking at the summer with pessimism, and is that the way you're looking at it as well?
Yeah, I can understand it. We're potentially going to lose two or three of our best players in Nunez, Saints and Sargent. But we've been here before. We've lost players that were our best players, and suddenly somebody else has stepped up and performed just as well, sometimes even better. So we're never going to know until we get there. We're not going to know until it happens. Sargent's got another year or something on his contract, hasn't he? He's
a couple of years, a few years, 28, isn't it? Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Excellent. So that's kind of a bit more Norwich's decision, I guess. Obviously, they won't stand in his way if he gets a big offer from a big club. That's not what Norwich do, and I think that's admirable, because we, in order to attract talent like Sargent, they need to be able to know that if they do progress quicker than us, that they're going to be allowed to move on. So, I mean, if we didn't do that, then players like Sargent would have never turned up and been happy playing in the Championship for Norwich. So, it's going to be an interesting summer. Obviously, we'd like to keep everybody. Some players I'd rather keep more than others. I think Sargent's probably the top of my list. I would rather him stay. Nunez and Saints kind of sitting underneath him. But as I think Napa mentioned in a recent interview, it's opportunity cost or something he said. If somebody who's playing really well is still at the club, it denies an opportunity for another player like the Ruari McConvilles and the other young players that we've got. So it'll be interesting to see what state we end up in for pre-season and at the start of the season. And as always, I'm really excited, and I'll be going to as many pre-season games as possible, just like I always do.
Good man, and we will be there as well, hopefully. And you're right, because there is an element to this, Paddy, and that, of course, is selling talent. Norwich have done that notoriously, certainly over the last few years. They're likely going to do it again this summer, and I'm sure we're going to speak a lot about that in the next however many months until those players do depart. But there is another strand to this as well. And you know, for all of the comparisons of 17-18, you look at that. Norwich sold their top three scorers at the end of that season, which was James Maddison, who obviously went to Leicester. Josh Murphy, who went to Cardiff. Nelson Oliveira was still there, but went out on loan and didn't really play for the club again. I think their next top scorers after that were Tim Closer and Ivo Pinto. So that was where they were post 17-18. This year,
bad that season.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and those three basically accounted for 60% of the goals. Which, if you look at Sargent and Saints, that's roughly where they are. It's about 60% of Norwich's goals, overall goal contributions that they've contributed to. But the key after that season was the recruitment and getting that strand right. And that's gonna hold the keys this summer again, isn't it? Because we can talk about selling players and being happy to sell players and wanting the opportunity to sell players. But that's only okay if you do maybe what Brighton have done, which is get your recruitment levels up to a point where you can replace them with quality players.
And that they've been quite open. The sort of the Brighton, the Brentford model is ultimately what they're striving to do. But Brentford being a good case study, how many times did they have to go again, fall short on the pitch in the Championship, go again while losing better players? But it worked ultimately, and now you look at them and they are an established Premier League club. But that would be quite a long process. So what you're hoping is that Norwich can short circuit a little bit, if that is the case, rather than it's Brentford levels of longevity at this level of the pyramid. But and I think it goes back to the first point, that if we don't see enough evidence in these remaining eight games on the pitch from this group of players and this head coach, I think there's more of an onus or more of an emphasis then on what Napa and Lee Dunn and the recruitment types can perform in the summer, because the feeling will be, well, that group of players aren't quite going to cut the mustard in terms of next season being realistically top six contenders. So that's another byproduct of these remaining eight games. If you finish on an upward note and, you know, Cernach comes to the party, and Schwartau, and I don't know, throw a few other names in, Amankor Forsen, for example.
Yeah.
Then you start to think, well, and all of those players I've mentioned were summer 24 recruitment. Yeah. So if the feeling is that some of the signings they made last summer, with a bit of time to adapt, have started to show consistently that they will be able to nudge this club forward, then that bodes well going into 2025 summer. And I mean, it's worth reiterating, taking it right back to the end of that summer window. I mean, by common consent, Ben Napper was getting hailed in many quarters, mm-hmm. you know, both for the inward business, but also, you know, how they dug their heels in on Adam Eder and the valuation there with Celtic, and obviously John Rowe, the Abu Kamara situation. It felt in all of those rather tricky, destabilising elements that Napper drove quite a hard bargain, and at Norwich weren't a soft touch. And so I think his challenge is to maybe repeat, if not better, what he did in 24 summer window recruitment wise, and because that will create a feeling around the fan base going into the new season that, you know, if it is Science, Sargent, Nunes, they go, but they go on Norwich's terms, and Norwich drive hard bargains, and if they bring inward players in, as they will do, that they're ones that can excite. And also, I think it's important to stress that maybe Norwich fans feel that they're in the here and now, these players can make a difference, not too many of the project players that are maybe young, potentially in terms of transfer values, they can grow in a Norwich shirt. But as you would probably say around Cernach and Schwartau and Forsen and most of the business last summer, not ready in the here and now. And I think that's a key strand to this summer. If you are saying what we've done this season gets us in a position to attack the top six properly next season, I think you're going to have to add some players who are a bit more further along the path. And that in itself is a challenge, because they still want to do that within the environment of a model which is buy young, develop, sell, having benefited Norwich's first team in the short term. So it all leads to quite a challenge in summer, I think. And obviously Ben Napper will have to lead that. But if I was looking at it with a degree of detachment, I'd see how he conducted himself last summer. And he's going to be better this time around because he's had that experience. He's lived through that as a sporting director. So, you know, a lot of what they did last season got a thumbs up from many Norwich fans. So, you know, I'd probably back him to go and do what's required in the summer. But you would hope that that is running counter to what Torup has been able to do maybe in the final part of this season with this group of players, to just engender that optimism that on and off the park, they're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and clearly there's the other strand to this, which is contracts. I know some of you guys have asked questions about that, so we'll come on to that in the second half. But, I mean, Sam, of this crop that you're looking at, and we go back to, again, that 17-18 and the difference between the seasons, and I use that purely not as an example of what I'm not really going to go on to in the league, because as we've discussed, that's not a guarantee, but I use it as an example of a multi-year plan progressing in year two, which is relevant to what we're talking about now. Some of those players that really did step up that were here in year one as well. Marco Stieferman, who was left back at one stage. Mario Vancic, throw some others in. Moritz Leitner, Onel Hernandez, who signed in the January. There are examples there of sort of what Norwich need now, which is some of the players that Paddy has mentioned in year two to be significantly stronger and more comfortable, not just in English football, but in Norwich in the system that Torup wants to play.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there have been signs of that, to be fair. I think look at Ante Cianac as a, you know, case in point. I mean, how poor did he look at times in September or October when he wasn't really offering much of a physical presence? The goals weren't really coming in his game. There weren't even really any assists or moments where you thought, okay, that's why they've spent £8.5 million on that guy. But so often now in the last couple of months, he's been producing the sorts of performances that I think you'd associate with that type of fee, and with the sorts of sentiments that are coming out about him from Johannes Hoftorup and from other people behind the scenes at the club. So there's him, there are other examples who weren't even brought in as part of the sort of current setup. Marcelino Nunez, for example. Mm-hmm. I know obviously he's not necessarily testament to the work that Johannes Hoftorup can do with players, but he's testament to the fact that you can bring in a talented player, they can look like a rough diamond in the first year, and then they can introduce that consistency once they've got used to things, once they've had a chance to embed themselves into English football and things like that. I think they've got numerous examples in that squad who people are already feeling more confident about than they were you know, when they signed or in the first few months of their time at the club. So you take that and you add in a little bit of a break at the end of the season, a chance to refresh, maybe some of the confidence that they'll get from, if you take Sienna as an example, I think Oscar Schwartau would be another one of maybe those players who do move on in the summer, and the fact that they probably will get a bit of a boost out of maybe being the main man next season, or, you know, taking on that role. So you combine that with, you know, a pre-season and the chance to, yeah, understand better Yanisov Torup's ideas and get a bit more time to work on those things. I think there are a lot of reasons to believe that they can improve next season. I mean, you mentioned a few of those the last time that Norwich had a sort of similar project to this as well. So I think if people are looking for positives, then there probably are plenty of them in the past, and even some of them in the recent past. But that's the problem, is that it's all stuff in the past. It's all, you know, this might happen and this probably will happen, and there's this suggesting that this could happen. Ultimately, there hasn't been any evidence from this team yet that they can be any better than a mid-table championship side. I mean, obviously, there have been isolated performances, but that's not what gets you promoted. So I think it's easy for us to sit here and talk about the positives and to, you know, pinpoint the reasons why you could be optimistic. But ultimately, you know, the proof will be in the pudding, and we'll see the evidence of that next season. So, yeah, I don't want to get ahead of myself too much. But having said that, you know, I spoke about a number of the positives I think there are that you can look at. And yeah, I think there is some evidence at least to suggest that there are players currently within the group who will kick on and be even better next season.
Yeah, no, you've mentioned Mate Jurasek, who we've not really seen yet as well. And it's interesting because I think all the areas that we've pinpointed, selling players, signing players, some of those players coming to the fore, it shows all of the stuff that's in the pot and you know, how much of it is reliant on chance and probably is out of their control in terms of signing players that are ready to hit the ground running, selling players at the right time and balancing the team out. That shows how much goes into this and how careful an equation it has to be in order to get all of that into a place of success, and probably time as well. Zach, let's end part one with you then on 2 points. We will talk about buses in a moment. But before that, of this crop that we're talking about, maybe some of those players that signed last summer, who are you most excited about and thinking, yeah, I want to see more of them heading into year two of this?
I think the one for me that I've been most impressed with when he is playing is Oscar Schwartau. Mm-hmm. I remember one specific game, I can't remember which one it was, but he started in the central midfield rather than out on the wing. And it reminded me a bit of Stieperman, actually, just kind of carrying the ball through
the next stop is
people
Pettis
where
Road.
You didn't think it was even possible, like you thought, oh, he's going to lose the ball there, and suddenly he's come out the other side and he's still got it. And you think that's a nice rough diamond, as someone's mentioned before, that I think a bit more growth and experience and things, and he could be a really good player for us. Emmanuel Forsen, obviously, he's got some left foot, as we saw against Coventry. Sorry, Paddy. That was so it'd be nice to see some more of him, and obviously now he's back from his injury, perhaps we will in these last eight games, and excited to see what he can do. And there are reasons to be positive, and there's plenty of players in there that hopefully will end up being just the ticket.
very nice. Just to end part one then, tell us what's going on with First Bus, and sort of update us on what's going on, because there's some exciting stuff happening.
There is, yes. As of the 30th of March, First Bus will be operating the park and ride from Thickthorne Airport and Sprowston. So we'll be operating those three sites into the city. And the buses that will be used on those sites will be electric, just like this one. Next stop announcements and things, as you've probably been hearing throughout the podcast. Smooth, quiet. The timetable is going to be increased as well from what's currently on offer. So there'll be basically high frequency, earlier buses, later buses, zero emission, quiet, smooth electric buses. And the best thing about it is you can try it out for free on Sunday, the 30th of March, for one day only. All park and ride journeys on that Sunday will be free. So come and give it a go. Come and see what it's all about. And then obviously the idea of, I guess, saying this on this podcast is come and go to the football game on the park and ride. Now that we will have those later buses and connections, it doesn't matter whether the game's on Sunday, whether the game's on Tuesday evenings or Saturday daytimes, you're going to be able to get back to the park and ride site. So if you are coming from a bit further afield and you don't live in Norwich, then Norwich Park and Ride is for you. So come down to the travel shop, give us pick up one of these lovely leaflets, and all the information's in there, all the timetables, and yeah, come and have a go, the just like the Pinken guys have today.
Yeah, and just to bounce to Paddy, I mean, you're really impressed with one feature on this bus in particular, aren't you? So, I mean, to talk us through. Are you so excited? It's the most excited I've seen him, actually, I think.
What, these high-end USB ports?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. Shows how, sadly, infrequently I go on, but I had to get the 24 from near my house to the Castlemaid only the other day. Travel correspondent now as well, yeah. As well as everything else. And. Because my car was in for its MOT, and pleasantly surprised by the speed, efficiency, professionalism of the driver, and also the fact I could get some charge on my phone, because if you live in my house, that is...
It's like, gold dust,
it is
it?
Absolute. It is it's more than gold bullion to have an actual iPhone cable, so the fact that I could jump on a bus and get some charge was... it won't be the last time I'm on, excepting today, of course, but I've definitely, to echo what Zach said, I mean, that would make a lot of sense, you know, if you're on a match day, mm-hmm. to be able to take the stress of having to park anywhere, as we all know, around the city increasingly is a challenge.
It's hard enough for us, isn't it?
Yeah, and on a match day. So I think that's definitely something I would be looking into further.
Yeah, of course, Zach, go for it.
Sorry, I forgot to talk about price, because obviously all the bus tickets at the moment are £3 singles, but the park and ride is going to be £3 for the day, so you can get there and back for your £3. So that's twice as good value as the normal bus tickets are already. And I think, do you want a job in marketing there after that speech? That
was
fantastic. Yeah.
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what covering Norwich City does too, man. You start branching out. Well, thank you for that, Zach. And yeah, definitely check out all of those. We'll leave a link down below if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening as well, to where you can find all of that relative information should you wish. And yeah, I think it's going to be really useful to a lot of people, that. So yeah, thanks for that, Zach. That brings to a close part one of the podcast. In part two, we're going to be answering some of your questions, and there's plenty of them to get through. So I'm looking forward to that. See you in a sec. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you by First Bus, on a First Bus as well. And we are at the very back of this 25 bus, just pulling into UA now, actually. So at the halfway point, it's almost like we planned this, which is nice. And the second half of the show is going to be spent sort of answering your questions and sort of speaking about what you want to speak about. We don't really get to do that, really, the way our podcast works. We tend to do them after games. It's difficult to sort of ask for opinions. So these international breaks, if not my favourite things in the world, which they're not usually, it is a nice opportunity to maybe do some stuff we don't get time to, like travel on one of these wonderful buses, which is great. Loads of questions, so thank you for all of those. I'm going to start on X, and then we'll go over to Facebook. Obviously, we're up against the time, so we'll try and do that. I'll start with a general one for all of the guys, and we'll split it. This is from Finley on X. So thank you, Finley, for your question. And he has, well, it's not really a question, it's more just a fill in the blank. So I'm going to say these to you, Sam, and then you can fill in the blanks. Player of the season. This is a good one. I've been thinking about this a lot.
I've thought about it. It's one of the hardest ones for a little while. But for me, it's got to be between Josh Sargent and Borja Sainz. I think Sargent's more important probably to the team. I think we saw that when he was out injured. And I mean, Norwich weren't in their best form when Sainz was suspended. But I think we saw last season, and I think we've seen this season, just how important Sargent is to the team. But obviously that start to the season for Sainz was unbelievable. So I would imagine it probably will be between those two, but I think the percentages will be a bit more spread out than previously. So I'll just about say Sargent.
Underrated. Who's been underrated this season for you?
I'll say Ben Crezene. I think, I'm not saying he's been sensational, I think he's been basically decent, 7 out of 10, but at times he almost gets completely forgotten about. And for what it's worth, I think Lucien Mahovo is probably ahead of him at this moment in time, and may well go into next season as Norwich City's starter. But I think for 1.5 million, a homegrown young player. I think Krasene stepped in and done a decent job.
Yeah, this is good for you two guys because you can think about this. Two more. Best moment, that's the foremost of the season.
Got to be Forcing against Coventry, yeah. Hasn't it? Sorry again, Paddy.
And the final one, future star. I like that one. That's a good one. So I guess you can fill that however you
to
like.
To me, the answer is quite obvious, but Zach's already talked about Oscar Schwartau a decent amount. So I'll try and think of another one. And I've already referenced Mahovo and how good he's been. So I'll say Callum Fisher. I don't think that's necessarily a very hot take, but for somebody who was firmly behind Jack Stacey in the pecking order last season to come in and now be not only basically a starter every single game for Norwich, but one of their better players in a lot of their games. It looks like he will be a big future star. Yes, yeah, so I'll say Fisher.
Good stuff, Paddy. Let's come to you. Player of the season, first and foremost. Who takes it for you?
Well, if Sargent has a decent goal burst in his remaining eight games, then he would take it. I'd throw Callum Fisher in. I really would, just because of his versatility, his consistency. A player has really emerged. You know, we're talking about in early parts of the pod and previous pods about young players who have been up and down and some have been more exposed than others. But there is almost, by dint of the fact that Jack Stacey was the first choice last season, is now playing second fiddle, effectively, really grabbed his chance over a whole 8 months or so of football. So for me, probably Sargent, but as Norwich fans have to vote for their top three, I think I'd probably put Callum Fisher in the top three, definitely.
Yeah, I'm not going to blow my own trumpet, but I did predict, I think, in our first pod that he'd have a good season. We'll revisit them at some stage if they go well. If not, then we'll completely ignore them. Underrated, Pat, who's been underrated for you this season?
Well, let's throw a grenade in. I'm going to shake Shane Duffy. Because, effectively, you know, he had, in the nicest sense, he had a bit of an image problem to overcome. On the pitch, we don't even need to get into the off the pitch elements, which anybody can go and read about going into this season. And then, of course, the opening day of the season, it's just popped into my head. It was him and Hanley who didn't have their best days, as Norwich didn't on Thorup's big day against Oxford, defeat that day. That pretty much did for Grant Hanley. And you thought it might do for Shane Duffy, but the way he came back and up until that disciplinary episode, which again, you know, chapter and verse can be read on other platforms. We don't need to get into that. Against Oxford, he'd started 35 of 35 games. I think I'm right in saying he was the only player for Torup who had done that.
Still most minutes.
Exactly. And not so much just the fact that he's been there, he's been ever present. But and I know people can throw out certain games. And my mind goes back to Sheffield United and how he got turned over for a very costly goal that day. But I think on the ball, he's actually shown he can do that. I don't think it's natural. I'm not sure he's the solution moving forward, if I'm honest. But because probably people would have, in the nicest possible sense, had a very low expectation of him this season, I think he probably has overachieved in that regard, yeah.
Future star, finally?
Future star. Well, I mean, obviously the ones we've already mentioned, I think, would probably be the uppermost. Let's throw McConville in there. You know, I mean, we haven't seen enough of him in an Norwich shirt as yet. But, you know, I like when Torup talks about, you know, him and Napa, their first meeting, and when they came away, he turned to Napa and Torup and said, look, we need this guy, and we need him because of his character and because he's a leader. And clearly he has the technical attributes, because you don't come through at Brighton if you don't possess that. So you feel there's a lot to work with there. And as I've just referenced with Duffy, they need to find some solutions. Callum Doyle will go back this summer. They need to find some central defensive solutions. He could be the answer.
Lovely. Let's go to Zach then. This is your four now. Player of the season for you? It's one of two, isn't it? It feels like.
I was leaning towards Sargent as well, actually, just because he seems to be a bit more reliable and consistent with his goal scoring. Obviously, Sainz had that bit of time out, and then it felt like he was some games trying so hard to score again, and then some games not trying hard enough. And you think, just have a shoot. And then suddenly he's passed it to somebody else. And you're like, why did you not shoot there? Because we know he's got the quality. So I think we missed Sargent when he was off. And yeah, he's at the moment my player of the season.
Best moment of this season?
Did you ask that to Paddy? Because I wanted to know what he was going to say.
I've done him a favour there.
It's obviously Forson.
I'll let him say it quickly.
Well, I'm definitely not saying that, that's for sure. Oh, I'm trying to come up with a flippant answer and I can't think of one.
It's because it's only Forsen is the only thing you can say.
Yeah, I can't get my head out of it. Yeah, that probably, I mean, clearly that was, you know, the epic nature of that.
Brilliant. Tell your face
brilliant
that.
Comeback. Brilliant comeback, yeah. No, I'm trying to think, what were the other standout games for us this season?
Hull was good. Watford was good.
Mm. Lots of games where we've scored four goals, isn't there?
Yeah.
Watford or
no, Luton. I don't think we can top that, can we? We can, sadly, for me.
So same for you, Zach, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The scenes in the Barclay that day were reminiscent of the Man City victory all those years ago. I slowly crept towards the exit. I'd had a bus to catch, ironically, but I missed the Tim Closer equaliser, and I've never left early since then. So I just snuck away and kind of stood right in the thing just as the second goal went in, and suddenly everybody was just bouncing, and it was a really good moment.
Did I ask you underrated? I did ask that. I'm losing track of where.
Not yet. That was my second question.
Go on,
was best
yeah.
moment.
You take
I was going to say Duffy, because of the same reasons that you said. Obviously, he's had the image problems to overcome, and he's been a reliable first choice starter, consistently just being there and doing his job. I think Fisher's probably the other one. I know people have kind of, obviously, do draw attention to him in that he's so young and he's just getting on with the job, but I think that's another reason why he is kind of underrated. He's there most games, pretty much every game, and he just does his job, and nobody seems to notice him. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's just there doing it, and he's a good player, and it's remarkable to come from the background he's come from at Bromley to Norwich so quickly, like a duck to water. And so he's my underrated player so far.
Future star,
other than Schwartau, as I've already spoken about him, we haven't really got much evidence to go on, but we didn't with McConville and Paddy's answer. I'm going to say Vicente Reyes jumping in he did, kind of getting us out of a hole there with both of our goalkeepers down. I don't really think he did anything wrong, to be honest. I know we didn't win either of those games, but I'm looking forward to seeing more of him in the future.
Good stuff. Thank you, Finlay, for that. That was good. It's got us going. There's been plenty of questions on the goalkeeping situation, which feels like a good place to move to next. I mean, we've had Dan Emery on X, so hard not to call it Twitter, which is what it is. What do you think the goalkeeping department will look like next season? And is it too big of a gamble to keep long and risk him having him play if their aim is promotion? There was someone else as well, Fudge for Brains, which is their name, not what I'm calling them. Goalkeeping situation, has Angus's form dipped since the Euros? Is it a gamble to hope it returns? Goalkeepers underperforming, blah, blah, blah. There was another one as well. So apologies to the person that I've missed. But general sort of comments about the goalkeeping department, Sam. How do you think it shapes up?
Yeah, it's obviously a big department for them to sort out in the summer. But to be honest, I don't really see much change apart from in the first choice situation with Angus Gunn. I think it's quite clear to everyone now that it's very unlikely he gets a new contract. Still no talks, according to the main man, a few weeks ago. So, yeah, it feels pretty likely at this stage that he leaves. And then, obviously, they've got big shoes to fill. I think it's right that his season has dropped, or his form has dropped this season compared to where it was last season. I still don't think he's been a terrible championship goalkeeper by any stretch. I think he's been, you know, decent enough. But when you look at the fact that for me he was the best goalkeeper in the championship quite clearly last season, that is quite a significant drop off. So I wouldn't I would back him to go and perform anywhere else he does go, but it feels like with sort of the new regime and maybe the fact that they're looking for some slightly different ball playing skills, somebody who can probably, rather than just holding their nerve and playing short passes, actually look to progress attacks with longer passes, I think it does look like they'll go for someone else. But those are the characteristics I think they'd look for. Probably someone a bit younger than Gunn, maybe not necessarily a sort of 19-20 year old, because that's probably not what you want from your goalkeeper. But I think somebody a bit younger who can play those slightly longer balls and be a bit more proactive in possession, that's probably the sort of profile. And then in terms of the rest, I suppose there's a question about potential loans for the likes of Reyes and Archie Mayer and Dan Barden, but I think as far as George Long, they gave him a 3-year contract earlier this season. I don't see anybody willing to take his wages off the Norwich books. Ultimately, he's homegrown. He's a decent character, and he won't complain about being the second choice. So although I don't think he's a perfect goalkeeper by any stretch, I think at this stage of the project there are probably other priorities that Ben Napper will be sorting before him. So yeah, I think maybe just a new first choice, and yeah, I'd expect it to be a sort of typical Napper Torup type signing.
Yeah, it's a difficult role, isn't it, that deputy role, goalkeeper-wise. And obviously, again, I don't know why I keep going back here, but if you even go back to the Farker days and the success they had early on, it was Tim Krul and Michael McGovern. I think we would probably all agree there was, not to be disrespectful to Michael McGovern if he's watching, which, you know, might be, but I think we'd all argue there's a slight difference in quality there. There always is going to be one. Could it be you know, a smaller distance? Of course it would, but then you risk, as they did have when Nyland came in and various others, you maybe don't have the right personality and the character. So
and you've got to spend money that you could be on another.
Exactly. So it is difficult. Paddy, you get one you're going to like. This is from Art Mixer on X. We ask all the questions that are asked. So here's one that was asked. Why? And he's not saying you specifically, but us generally. Why do you not press JHT on team selection, changing formation, injury crisis, bracket? It was clearly he's rushing them back, or the physios aren't doing an adequate job, and various other things people actually want to hear.
Well, we need to dig into that. I mean, press him on why players aren't available.
I guess he means sort of general press conference type.
I'm pretty sure we do that. I'm pretty sure that's how we start every single press conference, with a roll call. If he has so many injuries he can't remember all the names of them, or he chooses not to remember all the names, then so be it. But he certainly is asked on a religious basis. Every press conference normally would open up with an injury/fitness roll call. If his actual point is more related to pressing him on why Gabe Forsyth took 4 months or whatever it was between, you know, his injury at the start of November at Cardiff and surgery being the root, or why Nunez is residually, it seems, having these hamstring-related issues, Cordoba had his knee issues up until this period in the team. If that's where he's coming from, then again, I mean, we've put those questions to him. We could go and find the footage. So if the answers or the actual evidence is not what you want to hear, then that's a different matter. But it, certainly we have debated with the man himself about, you know, and to be fair, you followed up with, to be accurate, the Ben Napper touch point. It was the Radio Norfolk guy submitted a supporter-led question on that very topic about, is this something you actually have to accept in a case-by-case basis, is what you're not doing in terms of your sports science, your physical performance people, your medical staff, you know, the whole methodologies, does that have to be looked at? And I'm pretty sure Ben Napper's answer was, I think they reverse engineer, was his phrase, every single injury, and they go back and look at every step and what they could have done better, what was in their control, what wasn't. You know, there's obviously we can name a lot of those injuries which have happened in in-game situations. It's very difficult to put that at the door of practitioners at Colney in the support sides of the football operation. But equally, I think there are questions to be asked, and they have been asked of Napper. We've asked them of Torup, and we'll continue to. I'm not taking that as an implied criticism of us, but the reality is, you know, I don't recall a season where they've had this volume of injuries and player unavailabilities. So, you know, time will tell as we move through into next season whether this was just purely an anomaly, or, you know, if we're back here again, then those questions will get asked, and they'll get asked in even more regular intervals, because there's no doubt where Norwich are trying to get to. There's things that will be in their control, there's things that won't be under their control. But as Napper has alluded to himself, you know, any quest to get a consistency in performance and result has been directly hindered by not being able to get his best team on the pitch. He would tell you himself, when he's been able to play Nunez, McLean, Sargent, Gunn, et al., then the results are better, because you've got experienced players who know what it's all about and have the quality to impact games at this level. So, you know, I guess we're in the midst of this cycle now. We'll see if they come out the other side in terms of player availability. But, you know, to infer anybody in the media isn't asking him the questions, I don't quite know what content you're consuming, my friend, because, you know, you can get all our Torup pressers go out as live through the Pinken YouTube channel. Just go and pick anyone at random and start press play, and you'll see that, you know, we start with an injury and fitness roll call. And obviously in recent times, when it's got to the point where questions have clearly started to be asked by growing numbers of Norwich fans, I think we've reflected that, and then, and I know I've definitely put those questions to him. So, you know, as I say, you know, it's one thing asking the question, it's another getting the answer, and then the evidence of X is out again. So let's see where we are next season. But certainly they do need to, I think, have a forensic look at what they're not doing maybe in certain quarters, because I think there are justifiable questions to ask.
Yep, agreed. A bit of a gear change here now for you, Zach. This is from Jeff Mann. And this is a good one, I think, for you, given your expertise in buses. So this says, you're Ben Napper for the day. You have 24 hours to show a highly regarded player around Norwich. Norfolk, you can extend that to Norfolk. Where do you take them to really sell the Norfolk dream? What bus are you sticking them on, and what are you showing them?
Crikey, that stumped me a little bit. I wasn't expecting that question. It depends what season it is. Obviously, it'd be nice if they were looking around in the summer. If we go down the summer transfer window, then I'm definitely taking them up to Yarmouth and sticking them on our open-top bus. I mean, you can't beat the views from an open-top bus. The wind in your hair, the warm breeze coming off the seaside.
And, of course, they're practising, aren't they, for the open-top bus parade that they'll be doing at the end of next season.
Exactly. It's an acquired skill hanging on to those poles up there, I tell you. I'll take them up there. The bus goes all the way along Yarmouth seafront, taking in all the sights and sounds there, and then it ducks into the countryside through the rolling fields all the way up to Hemsby. So there's nothing really much better than an open-top bus ride in Norfolk, I'd say. So, yeah, if you're listening, Ben Napper, get on our 1C bus in the summer. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can go on the snails and you can do all sorts
absolutely.
On the seafront.
Yeah, yep.
So Yarmouth races.
Yeah, that serves indeed. There as well.
There's plenty there. I'll give you a serious one as well, Zach. This is also from
buses
Jeff.
Are serious.
They are serious. That's very true. Very serious. Which three positions, I'll maybe give you one. Maybe we can split it and go one each. Which position do you think Norwich should make a recruitment priority this summer?
Other than the goalkeeper position, obviously, I think we need another number nine. I know the reasons why they didn't do that, but I think it's evident when you've got Sargent starting and then Cernat is also on the wing that we're very light on other options on the bench. And if Sargent comes off for any reason, Cernat can kind of scoot over, but then he's expected to play 90 minutes in two positions. So I think we need a number nine as kind of a high priority. But again, it's got to be somebody that doesn't mind sitting on the bench, kind of waiting for the opportunity. Obviously, this is in a world where Sargent stays. If he goes, then we definitely need one, and maybe two.
Sam, let's come to you in terms of position. What's the one that you're looking at, maybe other than goalkeeper? And
yeah.
I recognise we're going to cover a lot of the team here, but
I was going to say there's not that many positions. Yeah, but it sounds like a strange suggestion because it feels like Norwich at the moment have thousands of midfielders. But one thing that I've been turning and saying to Adam in basically every single home game this season is they really look like they need a number 10. And it's something that I've been saying for a while. I think you go back through the lineage of great Norwich teams pretty much as long as I can remember. They've had really good number 10s and a lot of their creative output has come from the likes of James Maddison, Emi Buendia, Wes Houlihan. Even in the dark times, you had the likes of Alex Pritchard to sort of hold the fort for a bit. And I don't really feel like they have that complete flair, creative player at the moment. And of course, the challenge is that Johannes Hoftorup will want somebody who can also do the defensive side of the game. And I don't think traditionally your more creative number 10s have come with that skill. But if they can find someone like that with a bit of tenacity, but also the sort of old school creativity that I think they're lacking at times, then for me, that would be one of my main priorities this summer.
Pad, same for you. If you
I was going to say number 10, actually, yeah, for the same reasons, really.
The next stop is Caston's Court.
Because they have a lot of similar types of attacking potential, but I don't think they have that clever. I mean, I look at Sheffield United slightly biased as they're both ex-Cov, but you look at O'Hare and Gus Hamer, and just that type of very clever player in between the lines. Not sure that's necessarily fits into a Torup style system, so that might be wishful thinking. But the obvious one is the centre-backs, because we've seen, as much as we talked him up a little bit earlier, Shane Duffy, it's not naturally his game. And also, as we've seen, when Cordoba's come in on the side, and Johannes talked about the profile of centre-back, he wants the athletic centre-backs so they can condense the play, which there's two things. It means they can almost try and hem in the opposition, so you're always playing in their half of the field. That's a key fundamental for Napa and Torup. But also if the ball gets, you know, put in behind and you've got somebody who's got the pace to get back, defend wide spaces, one-to-one defending. So for me, Cordoba's the only one of that type in the current central midfield, central defensive mix. Doyle isn't that player. He's going back anyway, so discount him. Duffy isn't that player, and he's approaching the end, I think, of his career, to be honest. So we don't know if McConville can do that. It doesn't strike me as uber athletic. I think he's good ball playing centre back. So for me, that would be quite a key element, because it's so intrinsic to, allied to the goalkeeper, obviously, to how they want to build up from deep. So yeah, for me, centre back.
Very early shout. McConville reminds me a little bit of Tim Closer from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
I'm basing that on 8 minutes, really. So that could be wildly wrong. I'll bounce back to you, Paddy. One from Graham Leader on Facebook. We'll do two more. So this is penultimate one, and he has said Torup has had 38 games to sort out the defensive frailties and hasn't. Why do we think he's tactically capable of it next season?
Well, this takes me right back to the first point I made, which for me, that's what I'm looking at in these last eight games.
The next stop is
that work out of possession, and culminating in how poor they were for those two goals at Bristol. You know, the fact that it was just players pulled out of positions, leaving other players exposed, the spaces, the poor decision-making individually, collectively, all of that. The common thread is they need to be better coached. Because these are the only players he's got to work with in this remaining eight games. It might change, obviously, in the summer. We've just come off the back of a point there about bringing in maybe other defensive options. Let's see what that looks like. But in the here and now, that's a fair point, because the goals against column tells you that there are issues, residual structural issues, not just down to personnel. And that, for me, comes down to the coach and the coaching. So the answer is the jury's out on that element of him. I don't think it's in doubt that, you know, when it clicks in terms of in possession and how they move the ball so beautifully and so fluently, all of that you would think will only get better as he finds more players to fit the style that he wants, and the players who are here understand what they need to do. But the jury is definitely out in terms of out of possession. And yeah, so that's a fair comment for me.
And finally, we'll come to you, Zach. Like, you know, feel free to chip in, boys, if you want to. I'm sorry, it's a little bit of a light-hearted one again, I'm afraid. And this is from Ben Jones on X. Really important question that needs answering, in his opinion, is if you could form a five-person boy band from current or past Norwich City players, who would it be and what would it be called?
I don't think I'll be able to think of a name that quickly. Have we heard any of them sing before on any content?
I've not.
From the club?
I don't think so.
So we've got to go completely on looks then?
Yeah, basically. Simon McCowell's made a career of it, hasn't he?
You need somebody who's kind of looks a bit rockish, maybe. You know, somebody might be able to play the guitar.
I'll tell you who I'd have, really random one. If you're going down the rock route, Jonas Gutierrez, can you remember him?
Playing yes.
He'd be a guitar player, I think.
Is this past or present?
Past or present.
Okay.
You can have anyone you like, yeah.
I reckon.
Oh, sorry.
Ivo Pinto's got to be in there. Ooh. I don't know. I see him as a Eurovision contestant. I don't
know why. Nice, yeah. Who are we going for, handsome lead singer then?
This is completely stumped me.
Javi Garrido.
Yeah,
good looking man, yeah.
There you go. Javi Garrido, good looking man. So we've got three. Who are we going to have on drums?
That's what I was then thinking about drummers. Do we have anybody with long hair at some point?
I'm sure they
Todd
have.
Campbell, would he be a drummer?
No, I think
he might be a lead singer though, mightn't he?
He'd lead singer, Todd, yeah.
He'd get a lot of attention on social media.
Daniel Farke would be a good drummer, I think.
Yes.
I think he's a good drummer.
Who's that one who's in the Muppets?
Yeah. So we need probably another guitar player now, don't we? So he can fit whatever criteria
like. Ryan Bennett, he's like strumming guitars, didn't he?
Did he?
Ryan Bennett, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
We've done it. We just need a name. We'll leave that to the people to decide on that, and they can decide the name of it.
The first bus five.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. But that probably brings us to a close. Zach, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you very much for allowing us on one of your buses for this episode.
It's getting a bit busy, so we better.
I'm conscious that we're taking up seats as well, so we'll call it there.
Paddy, thank you, Sam, thank you, Adam. You've done a wonderful job behind the camera, holding that and juggling and whatnot. So we'll leave it there. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening as well. And of course, we'll leave all the information down below in terms of the stuff that Zach was speaking about. See you on the next one.